Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Adani Green's Q1 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Carol. On behalf of ICICI Securities, I would like to welcome you all for the Q1 FY24 earnings call for Adani Green Energy. Today, we have with us Mr. Amit Singh, CEO, Mr. Phoonsok Wanghyal, CFO, Mr. Rajkumar Jain, Head Business Development, and Mr. Viral Rawal, Head Investor Relations. I will now request the management for the opening remarks, which will be followed by Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon to all the participants. Thank you for joining the earnings call today. What I'm thinking is, before talking about Adani Green and Q1 result per se, let me briefly talk about the macroeconomic scenario and the industry per se in which we are operating. As we know, the energy transition coupled with the energy solution is gaining quite a lot of traction globally, and what effectively it means is sustainable future is now the cornerstone as well as the initiative which various stakeholders are focusing upon. Now, what it effectively leads to is, okay, there is a tremendous amount of shift towards low-carbon economy, which in turn means that widespread utility-scale adoption of renewable energy growth needs to happen. Now, even in Indian context, as you would have seen, noticed in FY23, more than 90% of power capacity addition has been through renewable energy. Even Government of India has reaffirmed commitment for 500 GW of non-fossil fuel capacity target by 2030, coupled with the fact that they have given transition milestone in terms of how incrementally every year 50 GW capacity will be added upon. Now, this is the macroeconomic and industry scenario in which Adani Green is operating. Participants, as you know, that Adani Green has been at the forefront of this entire energy transition story in India. We continue to adopt large-scale renewable capacity, and as we have indicated, we plan to achieve 45 GW renewable energy capacity by 2030. Now, coming back specifically to Q1 result per se, on June end 2023, we have an operational capacity of 8,316 GW, which is the largest operational capacity in India. Coupled with operational capacity, if I add our signing capacity and the letter of award, today we have a locked-in portfolio in excess of 20 GW, which gives us a very good visibility in terms of growth which we will achieve in near term. As you would have noticed, our renewable energy capacity growth has been increasing at a CAGR of 33% over the last five years, which is outpacing the overall renewable capacity growth in the country per se. Now, coming specifically to operational and financial performance, on a year-to-year basis, our operational capacity increased by 43%, and during this period, we added 2,516 MW of new capacity, actually, and this is basically a combination of hybrid 1,750 and then solar capacity of 212 and 544 MW of wind capacity. During the same corresponding period, our sale of energy increased by 70%, 6,023 million units, revenue from power supply increased by 35%, 2,059 crore. EBITDA purely from a power supply actually increased by 53% year-on-year to 1,938 crore, commensurate with the fact that we have an industry-leading margin of 92.5%. Cash profit during the same period increased by 55%, 1,051 what it effectively means is purely from a leverage management perspective, our run rate EBITDA now with this 8316 megawatt capacity stands at 7645 CR. With net debt of 40,800 crore by June end to run rate EBITDA is at 5.3x as on June 23. Now, this shows how our net debt to run rate EBITDA has come down from 6.53 towards March end 2022. From a receivable position perspective, we remain on track. We don't have any overdue receivable per se actually. And coupled with the fact that our sovereign portfolio as a part of our entire capacity is at 87%. Now, even the non-sovereign portfolios, we have not been facing any issue in terms of receivable per se. On second part, on operational excellence, actually, we continue to focus on operational excellence. And for us, safe, secure, and sustainable operation remains a cornerstone of our entire philosophy. Now, this is achieved through having proper O&M diligence philosophy at the site and widespread adoption of artificial intelligence and digitization of our network. Our Energy Network Operation Center, as we have spoken in the past, does real-time monitoring of our portfolio, makes necessary intervention, and what it has led to is industry-leading EBITDA margin as well as consistently high plant availability. We are pleased to inform that during this quarter, we have plant availability in excess of 99%, and CUF for our solar capacity of 26.9%, wind of 38.7%, and hybrid CUF of 47.7%. That is from an operational excellence perspective. Third element is ESG. ESG remains a very important integral part of Adani Green's operation, with sustainability at the core of the entire ESG focus. Now, when we talk about ESG, yes, decarbonization of grid remains a very important focus area, but we also need to be mindful that we should be reducing the overall carbon footprint. From that perspective, Adani Green operating plant continues to be certified as single-use plastic-free, zero waste to landfill. As you know, we are water positive for all of our operating plants for more than 200 megawatts. Now, we want to make our remaining solar plant water positive as well. Coupled with this, we are also mindful of the fact that decarbonization at an AGL level should not be an end to it. What is happening at all with the supplier? Now, from that perspective, as an additional ESG goal which we have taken is we will be doing entire study of supplier level, carbonization level at our supplier actually. And the focus is by FY26, we should be able to achieve decarbonization of our supplier value chain through our GHG supplier engagement program. That's from a decarbonization perspective, but it is also imperative that as a part of ESG, socio-economic development of the region is also a very important element, because at the end of the day, we will be operating within those areas itself. From that perspective, creating local jobs, supporting the local ecosystem, either through critical intervention in health, education, and community infrastructure, remains a priority focus area from our perspective. Last but not the least, localization of supply chain through our comprehensive vendor development program as a part of our project management assurance group, that remains a very critical focus area. And as you would have noticed, we are pleased to inform that we have largely localized procurement of trackers and continue to look forward for opportunities of wind turbine, solar module, as well as some of the critical supplies for our growth going forward. Now, all these ESG efforts continues to be recognized by global institutions. During this quarter, Adani Green was ranked first in Asia and among 10 companies globally in renewable energy sector by ISS ESG in their latest rating ESG assessment. Plus, FTSE recently reaffirmed Adani Green as a constituent of FTSE for Good Index, and our governance score at 4.5 stands well above global utility sector average of 3.7 and global alternative energy sector average of 4.3. Now, to conclude the opening remark, Adani Green remains committed to produce low-cost green electrons through continued focus on operational excellence, wide adoption of technology, and widespread renewable energy growth. We continue to leverage on digital and artificial intelligence-based solutions to drive innovation and performance. Just to reiterate, we continue to remain focused on achieving renewable energy capacity of 45 gigawatt by 2030 through widespread adoption of solar, wind, solar hybrid solution, as well as the storage solution. So I will conclude my opening remarks here and open for Q&A session.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. This is a reminder to all participants connected to this call. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The first question is from the line of Puneet from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much and congrats on good numbers. My first question is on your last year's solar installation cost. Given that module prices were so high, what kind of average module price did you end up paying, and how are you, what kind of IRR are you seeing on those?
So, Puneet, I think for us, one most important stuff is the relationships which we command with the suppliers does not necessarily put us on the short-term chart of whatever module prices you see. So that's where in our projects, and that is reflected in numbers as well, we are able to command industry-leading IRRs, which are, as we have mentioned, is at least 2-2.5% higher than the any competitor. So that's one. So we were not impacted that badly, or I would say badly, by the increase in the module prices. We were easily lower by at least 15% than the highs which you saw. At the same time, we believe the recent trend in the reduction in the module prices is something which will benefit us significantly.
So is it fair to say that at the peak you got a 15% discount, and even as it has fallen to sub 18 cents, you're still getting a 15% discount?
No, it doesn't work that way. That's what I was trying to say, that in your supplier relationship, you are not supposed to be saying that I'm market minus X. Yes, we are market minus X, but in times when the market is stressed in terms of very high prices, we do get preference which is more outsized compared to what you would have in case when the markets gets favorable for developers. So it's not a consistent number, but yes, our relationship is something which gives us something which is better than the market.
So current module prices discount should be lesser. Is that what you're trying? Because you're smoothing it out. Is that how you
so
think?
We will get preference than the market price, but not of the numbers which we had earlier mentioned, that
okay,
we are able to take 10-15% discount, but not at the depressed prices of what you are seeing today. Those discounts will obviously be there, but much lesser.
And basis your discussion, what are your thoughts on the module prices? Is there room for them to go down, or you think they should be bottoming now?
So I think, module prices has multiple dynamics, as you know, and you have been tracking. We have seen a significant reduction over the last 3 months. So the entire supply chain, as we believe in China, is adjusting to this new reality. Whether it remains there, further goes down, or it goes up, it's market forces which will decide. However, at the same time, given the current cost structures, based on the discussions which we have seen, have had with suppliers, the margin for meaningful reduction in the near term seems very, very limited.
I think beyond that, it will be just doing a crystal gazing and saying that, okay, this which way it will go. Because we have seen a lot of these forecasts going wrong badly in past.
And,
sorry.
Yeah, Puneet, and just to add two more points on that, okay. I think what you should be also mindfulness, headline number not per se gives the entire correct picture, actually. What sort of technology which is being provided. For example, even in solo module per se, you would have noticed that there are various technologies. So what is happening is Adani Green being a preferred partner for many of these module suppliers gets the ability to adopt some of the early technology ahead of market curve. That is first thing, actually. Secondly, okay. One thing which is also important is because we focus so much on developmental activities and securing land connectivity. So from our execution perspective, we have got a much longer period of development of these projects compared to, let's say, classic way of developing a project. I just thought of adding these two points.
Right. So this is very useful. Thank you, Mr. Rishi. My second is on your, the numbers for first quarter for wind CUF and the hybrid portfolio CUF. So wind CUF seems to have fallen, but hybrid is up. How should one read this?
Yeah, so I think there are two faces of it. Okay, wind CUF, yes, you are right. It has come down on a year-on-year basis from 47% to 38.7%. And this is largely on account of two elements, actually. One is, during this quarter per se, wind speed was relatively lower compared to the last year. Secondly, there was the force majeure event of Biparjoy cyclone in the state of Gujarat, actually, where a large part of our wind portfolio is carried. It's located right now. So these two elements, I can say, led to CUF for wind being lower. Now, from a hybrid perspective, actually, hybrid is basically, as you know, is a combination of solar and wind. And if you look at our solar fleet per se, solar fleet is consistently showing a higher CUF number per se. So I think you should look at the hybrid portfolio from that perspective. Raj, you want to add anything on this?
No, sure. So I think it is also the fact that some of the advanced technology plants have come to operations post last year first quarter. So obviously that impact is coming here, that technology play is giving us much better revenue on a per megawatt basis this year. So a lot of tracker-based plants, a lot of bifacial-based plants, those are available now for the full quarter of this year. So, and it's being added in the revenue, which is what you are saying here. So, and that is the reason what Kunsuk was telling, that we have been able to adopt technology much better than others, and which is what is yielding results for us. Yeah.
And just to put it in perspective, our hybrid portfolio in last quarter, basically quarter one, FY22 was 390 megawatts, whereas right now we have 2140 megawatts, which also includes some of the technological element which Raj was talking about.
Right. So basically, what you're saying is it's a new portfolio, so it benefits from higher CUF. And second, but it didn't get hit. It didn't get hit by the same Biparjoy impact.
So as you know, hybrids are for us more solar heavy. So project by project, 360, 100. 600, 150, 450, 420 and 105, and in case of 700, it is 600 and 510. So this is a split between solar and wind. So as all those are solar heavy, so the impact of Biparjoy on solar was obviously relatively much lesser. Second, Biparjoy impacted Gujarat much more than its impact in Rajasthan, which was more limited. So the impact was probably for a day or two max in Rajasthan, whereas it was significantly more in Gujarat in terms of extent and number of days.
That's very clear. Thank you so much. Just last one, if I may. Between in your new plants, what kind of solar CUFs are you experiencing and the wind CUF? If you can give some light, it will be very helpful.
It depends again on the plant configurations and how, where, and all of those things. I can probably give you a range that we are talking about now, a CUF of close to 33% to 34% for solar, whatever we are implementing, based on the new technologies which we have adopted and moving ahead further. Second, in case of wind, it is much more specific to the locations. So the near-term development which we are talking about, I think those are around the industry numbers because we are going with a higher wind size turbines. So the relative CUFs would be on a per megawatt basis would be lower, but on an LCOE basis, it is going to be much better in these areas. So
what kind of turbines are you talking about? Three plus megawatt?
Sorry?
3 megawatt plus turbines is all that you're adopting now?
This year onwards for the site in development, which is in Khavda. So we have one site which is finishing its development, which is 2.1 and 2.2 megawatt turbines, which is finishing its development very soon. For the second site and the site next year, we are focusing on high wind regions, and that's where we are deploying 5+ megawatt turbine, and that's where you will see these new turbines made for those sites being used and giving us on an LCOE basis much better performance.
That's very helpful. I have some more, but I'll come back in the queue. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Nikhil from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. I think my first question is in continuation to the previous one. If you could just give us some specifics on wind PLFs going forward, what should we consider? Given they've continued to disappoint everyone, I mean the industry in general. So what would be like a P90 PLF we could assume for existing and future assets for wind?
So I think, as I said, this is site to site. Specifically giving one number becomes difficult for me to respond, but I think I can ask Viral to engage with you on that. With respect to going forward for the large site which we are developing now in Khavda, there we expect the CUFs to be in the range of 38-39% per se, and I think P numbers would be a bit more realistic there just because it's an unhindered site with nothing in front of it and directly facing more or less the sea, and the wake effects are significantly lower, and we have the track record of last 6 years, close to 6 years now in terms of measuring the data there. So we are pretty confident on that particular site. But at the same time, I agree, for most of other locations which are impacted by some of the reasons which I have mentioned, which is more new turbines, the changes in the contours, changes in the weather patterns, those are more impacted and we have seen underperformance.
Let me add, this is Amit, just to kind of give another a bit of a color on this. I think while we are looking at PLF, I mean, the performance of a wind is a non-linear function. So it's very important that we maximize the performance of wind turbines. And to be able to do that, we are doing a very deep investigation using our digital and AI tools to essentially focus on two areas. Area number one is to detect problems before they happen, to have a proactive approach of solving any issues which might arise. And this will ensure that we are improving our performance, when winds are blowing well. But also there are other variables like pitch and yaw and multiple other variables which have to be factored in to ensure optimum, generation of electricity and reduce LCOE. So that is one big area of focus. The second area of focus is essentially to have a very performance-led, if you like, focus area in our O&M, where we are focusing on improving the performance per se of the wind turbine and PLF is one function of it. But I think we should look at the overall generation and maximize an LCOE reduction, essentially. So those are the two kind of mindset we are following, and we believe that will drive better results for us, both in Khavda and beyond.
Got it. Thank you. One related question is in terms of sourcing. So there have been some developments in Europe, which we understand doesn't impact India per se, because that's even higher rated turbines. So what would be the sourcing strategy, both on the wind and solar side? If you could share some color on solar, how much is Chinese versus domestic mix, and on wind, plans for future exposure to Siemens Gamesa or to domestic players?
Yeah, I think I'll just maybe give a bit of a color and invite Raj as well to add. I think when it comes to wind, I think it's important we customize our wind turbines to the geographies we're operating in, because it's, and I think we have also realized that having right inventories for bearings, turbines, and other equipment is important so that you are able to bring the plant up and running quickly. So our, you know, as we have stated earlier in the opening remarks as well, our medium to long-term strategy is to localize our supply chain, and we will continue to do that. And we will take advantage of any price gaps or any movements, you know, to take advantage in repowering or in new projects. But our overall strategy is to localize. And, you know, I think the European problem is very, we are very well aware. We obviously use some of those suppliers. But the turbines we use here are different, and the problems are also different. And we are working with all of them proactively to make sure that we are not as impacted, you know, as I think our European friends are. But go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Amit. Just taking this forward for wind and solar, as you mentioned, specifically separate. One, wind going forward, and for we offered the site of Khavda to multiple vendors and saw that which turbines can actually be best suited for this particular thing. And the good part is the group as a as its own strategy on supply chain could develop a turbine for this particular Khavda site, which is what we intend to use in this area, given the fact that our analysis shows that those turbines are best in terms of generation and LCOE for this particular area. It's one of the very good wind sites in terms of wind speed, an affected wind speed, I would rather say, and which is where I think the natural strategy there is to buy this locally made turbine, which is customized. So that's the most important thing which I want to highlight, customized for this particular site. Now coming to the remaining supply chain, when it comes to say solar, so we have been working or with respect to developing the local ecosystem. Again, within the same strategy, the group has a manufacturing capacity for multiple components now. There is module trackers which are there. Within the module ecosystem also, we have multiple options. Say, a lot of our project has all of these taxes as a pass-through, so obviously that opens up significant sourcing opportunity from low-cost areas in China and elsewhere. There are places where we can optimize between domestic supply as well as supplies from overseas. So all of these is something which will, which is part of our sourcing strategy. And as Amit mentioned, as we move along, some of this will move to local supply chains, and we are actively engaged in getting those developed.
Understood. Just to understand then on modules, then you, I mean, the dependence would continue to be on China, at least till the ALMM comes in. Am I fair to assume that?
I'm not necessarily impacted too much by the ALMM in my contracted portfolio. My contracted portfolio is, you can say, does not fall into the guideline of ALMM right now. As we contract more, it may. That's where I'm in an advantageous position. I can easily source from the cost-competitive countries. But I think the more factor for me is whether the BCDs are passed through or not. The good thing is in almost... all of my portfolio, except in a few cases, I have this particular duty as a pass-through, as a change in law. So that is where I'm optimizing my project cost and I'm optimizing the LCOEs. It is well understood, and that is a clear-cut focus from the management, that we need to develop the supply chains in a manner which can support our future growth while we are sourcing the modules for our future projects.
Yeah, Nikhil, just to add, actually, if you recollect in the last one of the earning calls, we specifically guided that as far as this financial year is concerned, the capacity which we are building up has doesn't fall under the ALM as well as DCT pass-through. So all the modules will be procured from overseas, actually. And as far as our wind our project in this calendar, in this financial year is concerned, that is in the Khavra region, actually, where Raj was talking about, we have a customized WTG. So that will be locally sourced upon.
Perfect. That's very clear. Thank you. Just maybe then two last questions. One is if there was any informed power sale this quarter as well, which was a big support last time. And second, on funding, if you could share any updates on equity or debt side.
Yeah. So infirm power during this monetary quarter has not been that significant, actually. And if you recollect the same discussion which happened during our last quarter on the earning call also. In this quarter, actually, infirm power is approximately around 44 crore, actually. No, 20 crore from the specific project. Sorry, 20 crore. And what we do expect is, okay, where our capacity addition is planned for this financial year, infirm power progressively, especially from Q3 onwards, will continue to play a more significant role. But for Q1, it is only 20 crore, and for Q2 also, we are not expecting that much significant contribution from infirm power. And from financing perspective, actually, for this financial year, as we guided, we are targeting 2.8 to 3 gigawatt. And out of which, actually, for 300 megawatt financial closure already achieved, balance 150 megawatt already achieved, for 330 megawatt solar, which is under construction, that also the financial closure achieved. For wind 260 megawatt, we have received the term sheet. Now that is under finalization. And for balance capacity, that will be tied up through as a part of our construction facility, where bank group is diligence is already completed, actually. Bank group is already identified, and in next one and a half months we should be completing our financial closure for that.
Understood. Any updates on the equity side? There was this discussion of QIP or some other invest, anything on that, or not at this point?
Yeah, not at this point. What we can say is, okay, the board has recommended up to $1.5 billion USD QIP, which is currently under regulatory approval process. And subject to shareholder approval, as you know, we will be having 1 year to finalize the contours of QIP.
Perfect. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Puneet from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. My first question is, how should one think about you in the bidding trajectory? I don't see too much of your name in the current tenders. What is the strategy there? And secondly, what is the progress on the manufacturing link tender?
So, Puneet, this is the disadvantage of being logged in fully and acting in time to tie up the capacity. So, as I've mentioned in last call also, for my execution over the course of next 2 years, whatever we have planned, we have the PPAs in hand, the projects in hand. So, I'm not in any hurry whatsoever to tie up additional capacities, because generally you get 24 months roughly for execution. So I already have projects. However, we continue to look at the market for opportunities which can provide us real delta. So if there are delta opportunities or alpha opportunities, you may see us participating, not for plain vanilla solar and wind tender right now, because we have our plate full for that right now for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I think our focus really is an execution, and as you may recognize, to deliver 45 gigawatt in 2030, we need to really ramp up our operating capacity. And, you know, me and my entire management team is focused on delivering the PPAs we have signed and maximizing the performance of those PPAs to make sure that we deliver above average returns. And, you know, from existing install base, we look to optimize and improve our performance as well. There's no reason for us to essentially go out and tender right now until there is a opportunity like Raj talked about, which is attractive and high grades our portfolio.
But how should one think about the capacity constraint? You're still installing 3 gigawatt out of potentially industry doing 15. Is there a capacity constraint you're talking about in terms of execution? Is it more management bandwidth capacity constraint or just the vendor related capacity constraints?
I think there are two dimensions to this, which maybe are the ones which are in our radar. The first dimension is developing an ecosystem of suppliers and contractors. You know, we are now starting to touch the upper limit on capacity of the ecosystem. So it's very important that we proactively work with developing suppliers and vendors. So we have rolled out a very comprehensive vendor development program for our key suppliers, and we are strategically sharing our designs and plans with them to make sure that we develop them and we get them to be ready at a lower cost of operations to kind of match with our timelines. And the second one is essentially manpower and human resources on the ground, which is also very important to recognize that the country is growing and, you know, manpower needs to be trained. We have very important and right focus on safety, on making sure that we bring these people and get them up and running and trained. So we are, again, proactively launching that and making sure that we focus on that over the next few years to ramp up that capacity and also tie them into our agreements. So those are the two kind of dimensions we're focusing on amongst many others. And we feel that will be kind of what will be an area of focus for us in the near future.
Okay. And in terms of physical, when are you expected to launch your own modules and your own wind turbine? What is the timeline for the commissioning of those projects?
Yeah, sure. So from the perspective of these equipments, I think I just want to clarify that it is part of Adani Enterprises. The group is developing its manufacturing facilities as part of that venture. Within that, as we understand, 4 gigawatts of module manufacturing capacity of Monopark as well as the Topcon modules are already up and running. And they are backward integrating that further down to ingot and wafer in stages and then probably polysilicon, etc. They also have significant tie-ups for ancillaries in terms of co-investing in glass, module, frame, etc., and other ancillaries to ensure that the cost for them is competitive. That's one. The wind turbine manufacturing is already up and running. As we speak, they are awaiting the last clearance from MNRE to be able to commercially launch the wind turbine, and that can come anytime. They are fully ready to now start producing this particular turbine.
What is the capacity there?
I think it's worth maybe joining the AEL call and maybe have.
I think that would be better. Okay, understood. And the status on your manufacturing union tender, have the final PPAs signed now?
So I think out of the 8 gigawatt, we are close to 6,200 megawatt already signed. 1,799 megawatt is to be signed, out of which we are in very, very advanced discussion with SECI, where we believe over the course of next one and a half month, a significant part of this will be closed.
And lastly, if you can give some guidance on your thoughts on the CapEx to EBITDA, what kind of numbers are you targeting now?
Pardon me, I missed the question.
Your CapEx EBITDA, what kind of gross block EBITDA would you be targeting?
Yeah, sure, Manupke. So as we have, I think for run rate EBITDA for this, for corresponding to this 8316 megawatt, we are talking about run rate EBITDA of around 7,645 crore actually. And adding to 2.8 to 3 gigawatt of incremental capacity, which we will be adding in this financial year, we are talking about approximately 10,800 crore of run rate EBITDA.
Okay. And the gross block for this?
So in terms of for incremental capacity you are talking about?
Yeah, for incremental.
Yeah, so I think I think what we are capex cost per megawatt, which we are broadly talking about, excluding BCD for solar project, is between 4.8 CR to 5 CR actually. So that is what will be added for wind.
Yeah, wind, it will be close to 6.3 to 6.5 crores per megawatt. And so this again is industry leading in terms of the cost of putting up turbines.
Yeah.
Clearly, wind is very impressive. Yeah. Thank you. That's all for my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. Reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Abhyankar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. So, sir, you have mentioned earlier that we are looking to focus on execution in the coming years. So, when should we expect you to participate back again in new projects to build our 45 gigawatt capacity?
Yeah, sure. So, I think just to be very clear, as you understand the industry, the moment I take up one capacity today, I need to ensure that I'm implementing that within the next 2 years. Okay. And what I mentioned as response to my earlier question was that they're locking for 2 years. So you would see us probably doing more locking in capacities in the next 6 to 8 months as some of this capacity I start tying up for period beyond 2025. And there again, just to re-highlight what we mentioned last time in our call is I already have significant flexibility to be able to prepone some of the capacities which fall after that period out of my existing portfolio. So per se, I'm under no pressure to really get into the competitive bidding right now. And that's where the focus would be is that if I, instead of going into competitive bidding, I do other things which basically ensures that I'm able to get the alpha. And you will see us moving through that over the course of 6 to 8 months in terms of being able to highlight some of those things as we move.
Understood. And so now there's a lot of buzz around the C&I segment shifting towards renewable. So how is the demand and how are the inquiries going on over there?
So yes, you're right in terms of the decarbonization drive, which everyone in the world is now committing to for all the reasons which you know with respect to whether they have their own commitments, whether the countries have their own commitments, whether the exporters need to satisfy the requirements of their clients. So decarbonization has become a very big theme, and the opportunities around that is expanding very rapidly in the market. Added to that, for us within the group also, there are additional opportunities for which we get inquiries. So that is one thrust area for us where you will see some of the capacities being added to our portfolio. And I think as we do that, obviously we will be able to tell you. But just coming back to the point that from the overall perspective, having wind, solar, along with hybrid sites, along with PSPs, along with the capacity around other storage, the level of opportunity which AGL has and the way it can serve the clients it puts AGL in a unique situation to serve this. So I think from an opportunity perspective, this is big for us, and we are fully focused on it. And you will see some of that from us, from our side. The market is picking up. There is there are multiple models which are working in this particular thing because everyone has their own needs. We are fully into it, and I think you will see more of that being discussed in few of our next calls.
Understood. So you also mentioned about the 5.1 megawatt wind turbine that the group company is developing. So what kind of, what size of projects are we looking to execute with these turbines? And are these turbines cheaper on a per megawatt basis, or the project as a whole is cheaper? Well, basically it saves us the BOS costs. So if you can just briefly touch upon that.
Yeah, sure. So it's a 5.2 megawatt turbine, just to be correct on the number rating. As I've indicated in my earlier comment, the cost, as you know, is significantly lower on a per megawatt basis than the alternatives available. However, the larger the wind, the turbine, the per megawatt generation, which is basically the CVF, also goes down, and we are aware of that. And that is where we look at all these from an LCOE perspective, and the LCOE for these wind turbines, because of those being more suitable for the sites which we have chosen, gives it a significant advantage for us. So I think these are wonderful turbines when we are looking to deploy them in Khavda, and because these turbines, whether it is size, whether it is the performance power curves, whether it is thrust curves, all of that has been optimized having 5 to 6 years of Khavda wind data. And that is where we believe that these turbines will give us a significant opportunity there. In terms of turbines at other locations, while in few of the other locations, just because these turbines are pretty competitive, they may get used. At the same time, we also understand that at other locations, we would be looking for alternative supply chains, and accordingly, the decisions would be taken. But I think it's a bit ahead for me to comment right now which other turbine I will be using at other location, which is not in my execution plan right now.
Okay. Thank you. That's all from my side, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rabindranath Nayak from Sunidhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. So two questions. So you mentioned that group is actually developing its wind turbines recently, and also they are also ready for this commercialization. So what cost advantage per megawatt basis do you see in the wind turbine procurement from the group and that from the other non-group manufacturers? That is one. And you mentioned that the group is also looking for decarbonization need. So what is the capacity wind and this is from our side for the group need in next 2 to 3 years, as some of the group companies need to meet the decarbonization need. So there are two questions, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. On the first question with respect to the advantage on a per megawatt basis, I think I've mentioned that the cost on an all-in basis, including the turbine, BOS, IDC, soft cost, land, evacuation, everything put together is depending on the exact location is anywhere between 6.3 to 6.5 crores per megawatt. Now, if you have to compare it with different turbine manufacturers, and there is enough data available on that in the market, I don't want to really comment, but the broad range with ranges which we have seen, broad ranges we have seen is anywhere between 7.5 to 8 crore rupees or 7.25 to 8 crore rupees kind of a cost in the market for a per megawatt basis. But again, per megawatt is not the right way to compare turbines. You have to see the LCOEs and you have to see the locations where those LCOEs are being calculated, and that's where I would say that these turbines are one of the best ones for us in Khavda, which is our focus for development for wind in the next couple of years.
Okay, the structure of this turbine is for 2 megawatt or 5 megawatt, sir?
This particular turbine is a tubular turbine with a hub height of 120 meter. They have the capability of doing 140. This 120 meter turbine with a 5.2 megawatt rated capacity has a RD of 160 meter. Okay, so this is what is coming up our deployment in Khavda. However, the current project which we are doing right now, which is what we are finishing very soon, do use 2.1. So I just want to ensure that I clearly specify that my current project is finishing with 2.1, but my new project which I'm implementing in Khavda, that is going for 5.2.
Okay. Sir, is that the group need decarbonization? We can highlight something.
Okay, sure. So I think it's wrong for me to speak on behalf of the group per se, but at the same time, enough has been said around that. The targets are set for 2030, 2025 in different group companies. I can only say this is this infrastructure group in terms of providing the opportunities, and I think enough is us available for us on the plate to be able to cater to them on the capacities. You will see some of those as it crystallizes in terms of the project, some of those being mentioned, but we are not necessarily in dearth of PPA tie-ups for being concerned about whether this comes, when this comes or not. So it's a good opportunity for us, which is available coming from the group. So we will use our expertise.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Puneet from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Thanks. My question has been answered.
So you can go ahead with your questions.
No, my question has been answered. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's great to have. I see a question maybe somebody is asking from Dhruv.
Yes, sir. One question just came up. It's from the line of Dhruv Mochal from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead. Mr. Dhruv Mochal, your line is unmuted. You may go ahead with your question.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. We can hear you now.
Yeah, sorry. So thank you so much for taking the question. Sir, the question was related to the wind. You seem to have an advantage because of your specific designed wind turbine and the location. But I also wanted to understand, I think the Khavda location, it seems that the turbine works in the Khavda location best, but wasn't the Khavda location specifically for the hydrogen plants for the group? Or if not, then what is the potential of wind capacity that you can put up in this location? I mean, I'm just trying to understand what is the scope which is available, which is very easy to grab?
So, Dhruv, I think while that is a potential use case, but at the same time, as we understand from the group is in very, very advanced stage in locking in a very large location, much bigger than Khavda park what we have, for their hydrogen requirement. So that's where there is this particular entire park is something which we are developing is being fully utilized by us for the AGL projects. We are not envisaging any hydrogen related projects there. This is something which will further de-risk us significantly in terms of our execution. As you can understand, that out of the 45, close to 15 gig land is single location. So that basically the risk of significantly. So I think that's what it is. And the wind potential is something which is easily north of 2 gigawatt. More wind we are currently tying up, but yeah, initial estimates are north of 2 gigawatt.
So you mentioned 2 gigawatt.
Yeah, north of 2 gigawatt.
Yeah, okay.
But again, if something broke, it is not necessarily frozen, and that's where we would not necessarily say this is the final number. We are developing on it. Let's see what we are.
It will evolve. Got it.
Yeah.
And so you also mentioned with the CNI, you are also planning for pumped hydro. There were some discussions earlier about pumped hydro. You have, I think, got a few contracts in AP, but I'm not sure of the incremental developments. Are you executing a few projects, probably the size and scale, if you can highlight something? What stage are we in?
Yeah, let me maybe just quickly answer and then I can wrap up as well. So I think on the pump hydro, I think we are in advanced stage of engineering design and project study. You know, we are expecting to approve FID in the due course, and we should be able to kind of share with you an update in the later part of the year on our initial project engagement and execution plans. But it's fair to say that pump storage will be a key part of our strategy. It is a key part of our strategy, and it will be a significant part of our portfolio in the next few years as we grow towards 45 gigawatt. And, you know, I think this kind of questions you already asked, a lot of our C&I customers are asking for round-the-clock renewables or as much as possible renewables. So we will make sure that our approach is designed to service those kind of requests and maximize returns for the investments we're making in our projects today. And these large land parcels we have access to, remember, we have also installed in advance 2 years, 3 years of wind mast and resource assessment, which is allowing us to maximize performance of the wind turbines, and which has gone as a key input to our suppliers in designing whether turbines or all the balance of systems. And we are very confident that this approach is going to deliver lower cost of energy, electricity, and maximize our performance as AGEL. So thank you. I think we've run out of time.
Thank you so much. Thanks. That's it.
Yeah, if I can quickly wrap up, I think, you know, I reiterate what we said in the opening remarks. We are really razor bent on our target of delivering 45 gigawatt, in excess of 45 gigawatt by 2030 through the use of solar wind and solar wind hybrid solutions as major contributors. I also want to really thank my team and their dedication for delivering such outstanding performance, and more to be, you know, continued. Thank you very much for joining us today. Back to you.
Thank you. On behalf of ICICI Securities, we conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect your lines.